Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Financial Standard podcast. My name is Eliza Bavin, and I'm a senior journalist here at Financial Standard. Today's episode will be a little different as everyone takes some time off for the festive season. So as we wrap up 2025, we have been reflecting on some of the major themes that have defined markets and the financial services industry this year. And this year, we saw the private credit market boom. Investment flowing into private markets grabbed the attention of basically every investor, large and small, and saw increased interest from regulators, the RBA, and the government. My colleague, Matthew Wye, spoke to Tanara Credit Partners managing partner, Peter Sekeli, back in June about the drive behind the booming sector. Interestingly, elements of the unknown, like US President Donald Trump's next move, geopolitical tensions, and ongoing wars, were just some of the reasons Sekeli said investors were drawn to the space. So as we head into 2026, all of those same elements remain, making this podcast episode just as relevant as ever. Enjoy.
This is Financial Standard, the definitive source of news, thought leadership, and analysis for Australian wealth management professionals. Financial Standard, take the lead.
Hi. Welcome to the Financial Standard podcast. My name is Matthew Wye, and I am a journalist at Financial Standard. Needless to say, private credit has been gathering a lot of attention recently. Even among retail investors who traditionally don't have a lot of access due to the opacity of the asset class, as well as the valuation of the sector, which can be confusing. Standing at between $40 billion and $188 billion valuation, it can be quite ambiguous for investors to evaluate their investments. More importantly, investors are wary as they question if the momentum is going to follow through. And some will go as far to ask what the heightened scrutiny from the regulators mean for the non-bank lending sector. I'd like to welcome our guest today, Peter Sekeli, Managing Partner at Tanara Credit Partner, to speak about the current landscape of the asset class. Thank you for being with us, Peter.
Great. Thanks, Matthew.
So from your work, how has the private credit performed so far in 2025? What are some of the observations?
Yeah, so it's been, 2025 has been a very interesting year so far, especially with President Trump's term kicking off. You know, I think we're about 4 months into the year. He had announced 90 trade agreements in 90 days, and I think he's accomplished one of those. So I think it's been a year of a lot of trade uncertainty and then a lot of geopolitical uncertainty with, you know, the Ukrainian-Russian conflict still going on, the Middle East, Gaza conflict. So there's a lot of trade uncertainty, political uncertainty. And then here in Australia, we also have economic uncertainty. So we saw the GDP announcement yesterday, 1.3% year on year. And some pundits saw a red positive into it, some were negative. But overall, it's well below expectations of GDP growth north of 2%. So I think in terms of the market itself, an overview, it's been a very uncertain, fairly volatile year. And private credit is one of the products that's well designed to really be a counterweight or mitigant to the volatility in the markets. It is a low volatility product, largely delivering cash income. So I think for private credit itself, it's been a strong year and a strong start overall for the market. And there are some different areas of concern that we can go through in the podcast. But I think in terms of investors who are listening, private credit remains very topical in terms of, you know, being a portion of your allocation, which, you know, give some stability to your performance.
So, you know, how you mentioned about geopolitical uncertainty, I think we've well over those terms right now because, you know, that's been outspoken. But I feel like, interestingly, what did the May interest rate cut from the RBA actually mean to this asset class?
Yeah, so we're a floating rate product. So that means that, you know, when we were lending money to, for us, we don't do the property sector. We're lending money to corporate borrowers, corporate Australian borrowers. Just like a bank loan, that loan is comprised of two components. There is a bank bills component, so a floating rate component, and then there's a risk spread put on top. So for example, over the last 12 months, bank bills have been around 4%. In our portfolio, the average risk spread we add on top of that is 5%. So you'll see a gross yield from the portfolio actually closer to sort of high nines, closer to 10%, because there's also an upfront fee component. But what it means for us as a product is that cash component does reduce with the cut in rates. But that, you know, we're really, you know, sort of put that aside. What we are really trying to deliver investors is really maximizing that risk spread. So irrespective of where rates are, we're trying to maximize that rate spread. But rate cuts will flow through to returns. So in a higher rate environment, there's naturally a higher distribution paid out. We'll have a slight reduction of you know, 25 basis points with the latest cut. But in reality, 25 basis points or a quarter of a percentage against a 10% gross yield has very little effect in terms of returns.
So following that question, there's a high anticipation that, you know, the RBA might cut rate again in July. How would that affect the asset class?
You know, I think we're focused on RBA in terms of absolute yields. I think what's more important for investors looking at the segment is you know, what's behind the RBA's decision. So again, we saw the GDP print yesterday, 0.2% month-on-month, 1.3% year-on-year. The positives in that report is that the wage, not sort of extremely high, but there has been some wage growth, slight increase in disposable income. But the negative sides in that read were that private business sectors remained very soft and that pundits were disappointed by reduced government spending. And for us, we feel it's a red flag when you're relying on your GDP growth to be underpinned by government spending. So again, that's sort of the push to the RBA to want to continue to cut rates. On the flip side, the RBA for the last, you know, 3 years since they started the rate hike cycle in 2022 have been very clear that their focus has been on inflation. So we've seen the recent inflation print at 2.9%, and then on an adjusted basis, sort of mid 2%. So it's what is well within the range or target range of the RBA of 2-3%. But we think that it remains sticky. So we've come down and the market's obviously happy to be where we are, but we think it'll be a challenge to reduce inflation much beyond where we are today. So I think, you know, for us as an investor, when we look at markets, we see, again, the trade uncertainty, we see economic uncertainty and sort of, you know, weak growth in the economy here. And we see inflation still elevated from levels where it was, you know, ahead of 22, come down, yes, but we think it'll be a challenge to get up much further. So we think that will be a limit on the RBA to cut rates significantly this year. So we think July, there may be a cut, but it's probably 50-50. We think through the remainder of the year, we'll have one, maybe two cuts. And again, for a product which is, you know, yielding gross yields of 10%, another 25 or 50 basis points, it does affect the return, but it's not sort of overly material. What we are concerned about is more the overall investment market. And we think that having this type of product with that type of cash return is very compelling compared to other asset classes. And again, in an uncertain environment.
So looking at private credit from an economy point of view, when the borrowing power is relatively high, does that necessarily translate into a performance boost for private credit?
Yeah, it's actually, you know, I think there's obviously it's not one market. So for example, over 50% of the Australian private credit market is focused on property. And that can be a whole range from commercial property, which obviously has had a big hit. It can go to residential property, and it can be everything from greenfield development to strata deals. So there's a whole range on the property side. On the corporate side, again, you can look at, you know, 100 different industries. So again, it's hard to say that it's a sort of friendly borrowing, a difficult borrowing market right now. The way I would characterize it though is that looking at putting aside the property side and Tanara Credit Partners, we focus purely on the corporate side. There are some large opportunities, and these might be sort of 500 million type loan sizes. And we find that more a crowded market. So you'll have a lot of the global funds that names people be familiar with. So like a Hybrid, like a Bain, like a Blackstone, like a KKR, Ares, all chasing those very large deals because there's not a lot of them. In more of the middle market corporate segment where we play, it's really ourselves, maybe one or two other managers and the banks. So we feel like the pressure on competing for that business is a lot less. And we feel that segment of the market is held up. We think the larger end has become more competitive. So there actually has been some pressure squeezing spreads and yields in that market. But again, it's really, really segment by segment.
From the regulators, ASIC, they've been wanting to provide more clarity in the private markets, particularly in private credit. So as an investor, how do you think this interference would work?
Yeah. So I think just step back a little bit. I think first overarching comment is we think increased transparency in the asset class is a good thing for investors. And I think we do believe that we're fairly well advanced in giving that transparency to investors. I think what's really in part triggered this scrutiny has been if we look at the average Australian's household wealth, about 60% is in property and property related investments. And what's occurred over the last year is we look at insolvencies and the largest component of insolvencies in Australia today. It's about 27% in construction. So there have been a number of high-profile defaults in the property lending sector. And what that has brought scrutiny on is, okay, if you're an investor in a fund which has that exposure, are you clear, first of all, on the risks, but more importantly, also on the valuations of the underlying loans? And why that's important is a number of the private credit funds in Australia are evergreen or open-ended, which means investors can buy in this month, and sell next month. So the price point obviously is important for both the investors selling and both the investors buying in terms of being treated fairly. And I think some of these more high-profile property credit defaults have raised concerns, especially among the regulator, of what valuation approach managers are taking. So there is under the accounting guidelines some flexibility in terms of kind of fair accounting standards, where a manager or fund can take a view that as long as there remains at least a dollar of equity. So, for example, if a company is worth $100 million. They have 50 million of equity and 50 million in a loan. As long as if that 100 million in valuation deteriorates, say 40%, that's all worn by the equity. So your loan will still be 50 million, your equity value will be 10. And the accounting standards allow you to keep your loan marked at par because you still have the equity value below you. So that's one approach. The other approach is more looking at, as the value of a company that you're a lender to deteriorates, looking at what is the potential for a loss. So really looking at an expected credit loss scenario. So what is the probability of a default? If the default happens, how much will you receive back for your loan? That's on the more transparent side and more proactive side. And so I think What ASIC, I feel, is really trying to do is increase the transparency so investors know what valuation approach is being taken, how regularly are assets being valued, so that investors buying in or selling out are treated fairly. I think a lot of managers like ourselves, we use one of the big four auditing firms as a valuation agent. So we as an investment committee put a value on each of our loans, but it's also reviewed by a third party. I think the regulator wants to understand the role that those parties played. So it's really building what is, you know, for investors, and as you mentioned on the way in, what can be a fairly opaque segment, trying to build increased transparency so that investors understand what the manager is doing in terms of how you're valuing the assets, which is critical for their investment. So A, there's no surprises. B, is transparent to what risk is being taken. C, just in terms of, you know, for an investor buying in or buying out, you know, what is the, how is the price being struck? And then one last comment I've had, there has been a bit of scrutiny by the regulator where managers have taken an asset from one fund and sold it to another sister fund managed by the same manager, and making sure that the valuation is being sold out is at a fair price. So all these things are sort of circulating in the back. To me, it's all about transparency and consistency, which overall is a positive for investors.
Finally, I want to talk about what investors are probably most interested about. What is the outlook of the asset class looking like, perhaps, like, you know, in the next 6 months?
Yeah, so I think, as I mentioned, we think that rates will remain elevated, even if we see, say, you know, 0.5% of rate cuts this year. So I think in terms of returns, they still remain compelling. So we're looking at, again, senior secured Australian corporate borrowers providing net returns of, you know, high 8-9% cash return. So again, it's very attractive, especially versus competing asset classes. So you look at residential property, which I mentioned is a big component of really all of our portfolios. The average residential valuation is about 8 times incomes today, which again is fully valued. So you know, again, property always is a great investment, great asset class. It's not, let's say it's good or bad, but it makes sense to be diversified away from that. You know, I think in this current environment, share prices as well remain fairly fully valued. So again, I think having the safest part of the capital structure, paying a high, low volatile cash return is very compelling for investors. But I do think that having some diversification in the portfolio makes sense. So I guess, you know, again, going back to the property example, you can look at, again, more property exposure, or maybe you say, well, you know, the Australian demographics are aging. I'd rather get exposure to a corporate loan, which is, you know, lending to a business which is distributing wheelchairs or, you know, hospital beds, you know, for the elderly, because that's a high growth area. Or there's a lot of government infrastructure spending, so I'd like to have some exposure to the infrastructure cycle or to education, for example. So I think it's really in a challenging environment. It's still an attractive product, but I would recommend for your listening base and investors, really maintain your diversity, because that's really your friend in challenging markets.
That's all the question I have for you today. Thank you so much, Peter.
Great. Thanks for the time. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to this Financial Standard podcast. For more information, visit financialstandard.com.au. Please keep in mind that the information discussed in this podcast is general in nature and does not consider personal circumstances. Reliance should not be placed on any content without further independent financial research and advice.